Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about everything going on with the Cavs right now and league-wide, dealing with the ongoing coronavirus issue. We're going to talk about some draft stuff that the Locked On Network is kicking off and talk about the start of a six-game road trip, which kicks off Tuesday in Chicago. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Come on!
Evan, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing all right. As I touched on to you before we started recording, I look super hot to anyone who happened to be watching me shoot up nasal spray because it's allergy season. But other than that, I'm okay. I'm thankful to be breathing clearly, but I'm very happy for this warm weather too. I can't get enough of it. How about you, bud?
Good. Warm weather's good. I am pro us getting actual like non-freezing weather in Ohio at this time of the year. It's always a blessing for us to get that. But we're going to start today with an illness-related story. Obviously, one of the biggest, I think the biggest story in the world right now in every sector is the ongoing coronavirus outbreak. So the NBA announced on Monday that they're going to eliminate a lot of non-essential, quote, non-essential team personnel that includes media members from the locker rooms. This basically comes ahead of a league, a conference call they're going to have Wednesday about how to proceed. It'll be interesting to see what that entails. This is obviously a very serious issue. This is obviously something that is affecting sports around the world. You have, say, Serie A in Italy that they're, I think, canceling all games at this point for the foreseeable future, and they were already playing not in front of fans right now. The NBA told teams that, quote, these actions were among recommendations of infectious disease and public health experts. That is according to the ESPN story from Adrian Wojnarowski, Zach Lowe, and Brian Windhorst. They worked in consultation with the NHL and Major League Baseball. So this isn't just a NBA thing. This is a sports-wide thing. I think the world is obviously being very concerned about the coronavirus. Evan, this isn't something that I feel like I obviously don't know everything about this. It's very complicated. It's very dangerous for certain people. Obviously, it has killed a lot of people already. But what was your just reaction to this in our little bubble here?
Well, it's starting to penetrate our little bubble. Did you see the news today that there are three confirmed cases in Cuyahoga County? Or did you not?
No, I did. That was I distinctly remember like looking at that, seeing that news break, and then learning that like they basically announced that the three people in Cuyahoga County had it, but that they didn't like notify the people until after that, which I found kind of weird. There's probably some reason why they did that, but I just thought that was weird. But yeah, it is. I mean, it's everyone. I mean, just to pull back here in a little bit, like I have a work trip to California in a couple weeks scheduled to be in California for like about a week. And you know, I do not know if it is wise to go, if it is realistic for me to just go. You know, obviously it's sort of above my pay grade to some degree in that sense, but it's one of those things. Like, I don't know if it's smart to go on something like that. And yeah, I think everyone is pretty aware of this to a degree that's quite unlike anything else.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I will say that for people our age and kind of around our age range and younger, like it may not be something to be absolutely freaking out about, but it is something to be worried about, especially people that are older, maybe like our parents' age, especially because my mom and dad are close to creeping closer to their late 50s, early 60s. And so it's obviously a point of concern with me, but I think this is the right call. It definitely raises a couple other questions that I'm going to throw your way in a little bit, but no, I think this is the right call because you have to protect the overall safety of the athletes and it's unfortunate, it may not be the right word to use here, but it's understandable that they're just going to only allow team personnel who will probably be disinfected and make sure they follow CDC standards and everything else, just to make sure that everything's clean. And then, like, I know that Windhorst and Lowe and Wojnarowski touched on the fact that media members essentially have to be 6 to 8 feet away from players when they interact with them. So it kind of feels like at this point that coverage of teams, especially for like us with the Cavs, it's just gonna kind of take a bit of a dip, but it's understandable overall, and hopefully this is the right solution. But it does make me wonder that with the media being essentially barred from locker room access, I wonder if the next step is that, at least in the NBA, they're going to start strongly considering maybe telling fans to stay home too and just watching television broadcasts, because you're protecting the players, you have to protect the fans as well, and the fans are obviously where all the money is made for this to actually happen. So I wonder if that's the next step, and I don't know, I haven't heard anything, and like people I've spoken to within the Cavs, like, they're just following CDC standards and they have nothing really to report upon in this time, which is understandable. But I do wonder going forward, like, if they're going to take further measures just to make sure they protect the fans and they protect the media and they protect everyone within organizations in the NBA as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's going to be something interesting to watch. I don't know exactly what will happen with, you know, how players feel about that, you know. That's going to be one of the things.
He wasn't going to play in an empty arena.
Yeah, and if LeBron says that, and then you get guys like that are also stars that say the same thing, I wonder how that plays out. But it's like, we've seen Cristiano Ronaldo play in front of, I've seen pictures of him playing in front of empty stadiums in Italy in a big, important Serie A game against Inter Milan, which is, you know, features players like Christian Eriksen and Romelu Lukaku and like very named players. And David Zavak will appreciate this foray into Italian soccer on the Soccer and Cavs, but he's the only one probably besides myself.
Yeah,
but
I was like, say, like, you're speaking a foreign language.
Yeah, but it's just like you're seeing these big stadiums in Italy and there's no one there, and it's Ronaldo who, you know, like, the undeniably is just a mega, mega star. The other thing that I found, I think one of the things that I have found most interesting about this, and there was a Grant Wall tweet to link this to soccer, who he tweeted this on the 7th and then followed up with another tweet on the 7th. I'll just read these two tweets. Quote, the first one is, quote, many sports journalists will disagree, but I honestly don't think we ever need to be in a locker room. Doing mixed zone post-game interviews with the U.S. women's national team outside the locker room has never been a problem. Second follow-up to this is, quote, dumb to tweet this on my part. No other way to say it. I'll be clear. I wish we could find other locations for interviews other than locker rooms, but I would never support less access overall for sports media, many of whom have fought decades on behalf for all of us to do our jobs. He definitely got some blowback for this. I think that was very fair. I think the initial tweet, at least, I think his second tweet isn't wrong. I've always felt like I think there is a benefit to the locker room in terms of us sorting, seeing guys interact, but it's also a team-based thing. Like, I don't think that, like, certain teams, all the guys are still there after the game as they're sort of supposed to be, but the Cavs, like, usually get, you're getting the guys that they sort of want to talk, which I've always found quite a bit annoying. You know, I think with a mixed zone, the downside of that is, if one of the pitfalls of that in European soccer is that, like, you barely hear from star players. You know, and I think if that was the case here, it's like the LeBron stuff would go through certain guys. The Kevin Love stuff would go through certain guys. It would, I think, theoretically cut off access to us. I think you saw the Pro Basketball Writers Association really, you know, indicate that they don't want this to scale back our access to players. And I understand the health concerns. I'm all for us as a society, like, taking this very, very seriously. It's just one of those things that I think we probably haven't done enough. And I think just, there are people in the country now that are doing some really dumb shit when it comes to this. But in our little bubble, when you look at what's going on, I don't want this to mean we don't get to interact with guys as much, that I can't, like, get a one-on-one with a player at practice. Like, that to me would be just a significant problem. Not going to help the fans. Frankly, it doesn't help the team in terms of them getting the coverage that they want, and us and people actually caring about the product. And, like, again, if you've listened to us before, I am fully on the transparency is good take. Like, that is just a thing for me. So I just don't want to see teams that are already sort of media averse, without naming teams, use it as an excuse to be even more media averse. That is not something I want. You know, if they do press conferences like they do with the coach, I could live with that. You know, maybe I can ask for certain guys to get them on the phone. Like, there has to be some work around here where we're still getting the opportunity to interview guys like we would if there's a locker room. And honestly, frankly, like, that could already be better. That, like, we should already, if I had a chance to get more guys when they were not, like, when before they leave, like, that would be a good thing. Like, I think, frankly, like, Darius Garland should have talked more than he did this year. There's stuff like that where it's like, we probably don't even get enough access, but I don't want this to scale it back even more.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be the question I posed you next was, do you think that with limited media access going forward, at least for the foreseeable future? I know in the email that we received from the NBA, it said it's for the next few weeks, but I do have a feeling that this isn't going to really be figured out in the next few weeks. It could possibly get worse. I'm not trying to be a Fox News here and rain down doom and gloom on everybody and create hysteria. I mean, like, it's something people should be legitimately worried about, sure, but I do wonder, like, if players start to warm up to the idea of not having media in the locker room anymore, maybe not, like, players, like you mentioned, like Darius Garland, really just avoided talking to the media as much as he could this year. Colin Sexton's the same way, just playing examples from the Cavs. And these are, like, key guys in Cleveland's rotation going forward. And if they're just, like, really attuned to the idea of not having to talk to the media, period, like, what's saying that the NBA just decides that, okay, well, no more locker room access, period, just going forward? And, like, I agree. I think there are possible counter solutions to this where you can get players on the phone if you need to do, like a phone interview with them. Like, that's fine, but it's just that in itself is a bit of a hassle because you could be playing the waiting game and trying to, like, iron out each other's schedules, especially with professional athletes. They're busy individuals with everything they have going on and off the court. But I think, like you said, maybe if it's kind of like, just using the Cavs as an example, J.B. Bickerstaff's post-game pressers where they have 2 to 3 players come into the podium, give, like, brief 5-6 minutes, answer the questions, and move on. Maybe that's a possible solution going forward, but or after this. But I don't know. I do have a little bit of concern, like you said, like, it could limit coverage going forward because players could just straight up say, like, I like not having to talk to the media. Could we just keep this the way it is? And the NBA has rapidly shifted into a player empowerment league, which I'm definitely for and I'm totally okay with it. But I feel like maybe this is going to be another example where the players take control of the situation and they can kind of just, you know, refuse to speak to us going forward, which is, it is what it is, but it makes my job a lot harder.
I will also just say, like, if we have a situation where guys don't talk anymore and you, like, and people already don't like how NBA reporting now is so much gossip and, like, you're not, you don't, you prefer, like, the human aspect of these things, or, like, you want guys to talk about X's and O's. If that is the kind of coverage you want, and I think that is always the most valuable kind of coverage. But if you want, like, the other crap, or, like, you're afraid we're going to get a lot of the stuff where it's just a bunch of gossip and, like, us offering hot takes all the time or whatever, like, that, us losing access is how that happens. That is how that happens, and that's just the worst. That would be, like, an unintended consequence that I think would be very harmful. But we'll see how this is. You know, we won't be at a game for 6 games. Like, you and I will not be in attendance for quite a while because they're on this road trip. But we'll have to see what Chris Fedor and Kelsey Russo and the people in other cities have to say about this. You know, there are games tonight. I think that will be the first instance, and we'll see how other teams handle it. You know, one of the things you have to remember is, every team in the league does media differently. You know, you have teams like the Warriors who are very accommodating. You have teams like ones I won't name that are a little less accommodating, and we'll see how that plays itself out over the next couple of weeks. This is going to be a really interesting thing to see sort of how this plays out, but I will be the first one yelling bullshit if we start losing access.
Yeah, no, I will too. And for those who are interested in, you know, keeping up to date on things, Kelsey Russo and Chris Fedor are probably the two most involved writers on this team. They travel to every single road game, and they're trying to give their best coverage possible. But they too fall under that umbrella, being barred from locker room access. And I'm going to assume Joe Gabriel isn't one of those people. So if you
that's a good question, because Joe does work for the team.
He technically works for the team, but he's a beat writer, so I don't know where he actually falls on the spectrum. But
well, and then what happens with Austin and John Michael. Tech, they work for the sports network, but that's a partner for the Cavs. Like, I wonder if there is some kind of
thing there.
We're going to find out. You know, I mean, like Angel Gray, how does this affect her in terms of the post game stuff that she does every single game? That's really her now more than John. I don't think I've seen John in locker room in quite a long time. And, like, Fred used to be in locker room much more than I remember John being in there.
Yeah, Fred was a That makes him mad. I was thinking about it last night, but John Michael's been doing a good job. But yeah, no, yeah, he's great. Fred was in the heat of things at all times, and usually was like asking the first to ask questions. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
We'll find out what's going to happen. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about something that isn't related to the coronavirus. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. And we're back here on Locked On Cavs for Tuesday, March 10th. If you haven't already, please go check out the Locked On Browns podcast with Jeff Floyd. He's covering all the things Browns as they get closer to NFL free agency and the draft. So go check him out. He's always banging out like crazy long podcasts. If you think we have long podcasts, buddy, Jeff Floyd, just a machine. Okay, Evan. So let's talk about the 6-game road trip.
Let's.
Starts Tuesday night in Chicago, extends into games against teams like the Charlotte Hornets. The Cavs are just played by Atlanta Hawks, the Houston Rockets, the Orlando Magic, the Indiana Pacers before they're back home on the 24th against Sacramento. This is a road trip that I think has teams that are, I think every team, except maybe Atlanta, is probably better than the Cavs. I think obviously Houston and Indiana and Orlando are all above them in the standings, but Indiana and Houston being kind of the best two teams on this list. Mm-hmm. What is something you want to see in these next 6 games, though? What is just like something you would like to broadly see with this group?
I know it's kind of wishful thinking, but a team that's at full health and can play some winning basketball, quote unquote. But I touched on this a little bit last night when we were wrapping up the show, that Cleveland is currently 2 games back of Chicago in terms of draft lottery standings. And then you brought up the fact that they're 3.5 games back from Charlotte. And those are Cleveland's 2 opponents this week. And the first 2 games of 6 games on this road trip. So, and those are also winnable games for the Cavs as well. So that could kind of just make things a little funky and a little bit more panicky going forward with the whole draft lottery positioning. But I'm like kind of looking at the schedule, and yeah, like you touched on it, Houston and Indiana are probably the 2 best teams, but those first 3 games are certainly winnable for Cleveland, especially with how energized and motivated they're playing. But I am curious to see, because the Cavs have had a pretty decent homestand ever since J.B. Bickerstaff has taken the helm. And on the road, so he has coached 10 games so far, and 3 of those are on the road, and he is 1-2 overall on the road. So I'm kind of curious to see if this energy that the Cavs have kind of built up and the momentum off 2 strong wins against Denver and San Antonio carries into this game against Chicago. And then based on that, you just kind of see how things keep rolling there is. I assume by Friday when Cleveland is in Charlotte to play the Hornets that they'll be pretty close to back to being at full health, and maybe we'll just kind of see where the chips fall, where they lay and everything. But and I'm just kind of interested to see how Cleveland plays on the road more than anything, because I think that's just been kind of something that no one's really touched on when it comes to J.B. Bickerstaff's tenure so far as head coach.
Yeah, I think we need to see how much the Cavs are going to kind of put their foot on the pedal. I think I'll be curious to see like kind of how they try to hold up over this last little bit. Just for context, the Cavs right now over Bickerstaff's 10 games are 21st in the league in net rating. That they're right up there. They're like in this weird kind of no man's land between Washington at 22 and then Denver and Brooklyn over the last 10 games. So like they're sort of in this spot where like they're clearly like. They're playing okay, but they're clearly not like still very good in that kind of time span. If you want to look at offense to defense, 18th in offense, and then they are 18th in defense. So, like they're kind of a little better overall. They aggregate, they're not as good as they are overall. If you compare those numbers to the year, basically they're not nearly as good for the year in net rating. They're 29th in net rating for the year. For offensive rating, they're at 25th, and then defensively for the year they are 29th. So they're clearly not good for the year, but they've been markedly better under Bickerstaff. That's sort of statistically undeniable. I want to see how that holds up. I want to see if that holds up when you actually, as you mentioned, I think get fully healthy. And I think one of the things that's really unknowable about what we're going to see these next like. Whatever, how many games are left? I don't even know. There's not much time left. It's a lot less than I realized. And which you and I are talking about before we started recording, as we were kind of mapping on how many home games are left, which is really not many. But if you think about
total,
yeah, it's like not much. But when you think about this, like there's not much time left. The draft position sort of is what it is, but they can either choose to like do that, keep it in mind consciously, or they can put like not keep it in mind consciously in games against teams like Charlotte, teams like Chicago, you know, eventually teams. Yeah, I mean, there's just stuff you got to keep in mind if you want to not theoretically not lose your draft pick. I mean, they can slip a little bit more, and they're likely to, things are going to jostle a little bit. But I wonder if, like, you know, you see Kevin miss a game or two on this trip. I wonder if, you know, Drummond
calf injury flares up.
Yeah, you know, there's little stuff like that where I wonder if those guys don't play as much. And look, this isn't the last road trip of the year. Like, I mean, if you're looking at, I don't know how they'll play on this trip, but if you get through the Lakers game, then you play, this is a road trip they have after they play two games at home at the end of March. They play the Brooklyn Nets in Brooklyn on the 28th at 6. Then they fly across the country then they play the Suns at home on the 30th. Then they go Utah, Phoenix, Sacramento, Portland, and Golden State all on the road. They have to go all the way back out west. So the Portland Golden State thing is on 4-7 and 4-8. Those are on back to backs. That's not going to be particularly easy. And then you come home to Milwaukee and Brooklyn, and like, we'll see what some of these teams are looking like then. Obviously, there are teams there that are in the playoff hunt. There are teams there that are not really trying to lose, and there's teams jostling for playoff position. Their team in the last game of the year, like with against the Hawks, could really matter in the tank off. I think there's a lot of built-in sort of losses here, one would think, but we'll see. This six-game road trip maybe gives us an indication on how much they're gonna put their foot on the gas, so to speak, in terms of trying to actively win games. I also would expect that us seeing what they do on the floor will matter quite a bit more than what JB says about it, because I don't expect him to be like, yeah, we're trying to lose games right now, nor would I expect any player to say that. They're just never going to do that. That would get them fined and in a lot of trouble, but how they act will be really interesting. Yes, it'd just be bad, really, really bad optics.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I'm starting to wonder, though, with how the draft lottery went down last year, with Memphis and New Orleans jumping like they did, the Lakers jumping like they did, Cleveland kind of throws caution to the wind a little bit and says, you know what, maybe like they just kind of – they're not actively trying to win these games, and they're not going to go out there and try and do whatever they can to lose it, and maybe there will be scenarios down the stretch we see that, but – and especially that West Coast road trip, like that's going to – Portland and Golden State back-to-back is going to be two brutal games, and then – that should, I mean, Golden State is probably going to finish the year with the worst record in the league, depending on whether or not Steph Curry is fully available going forward, because, you know, Golden State's going to be cautious of him as well, and he's coming back from this broken hand of his. But, it's just something definitely to take in consideration about what the Cavs are actually going to do. And I also wonder that as the playoffs get closer, we start to see some teams turn it up a little bit. Like, I know Orlando is the 8th seed Eastern Conference, but they are I stand corrected. They have a bit of a lead over Washington right now, so I don't think they're too concerned, but maybe like they're jockeying with Brooklyn a little bit for playoff positioning, so they don't have to draw Milwaukee in the first round, and maybe they try and pull off a first round upset over whoever finishes in the second seed between Boston and Toronto. But like, there's positioning in that aspect as well. So maybe some teams that are like at the bottom of the playoffs are trying to like sneak in, like Sacramento, or realistically looking at the rest of the Cleveland schedule, Sacramento, and yeah, Portland as well. Those two teams are trying to jockey for that 8th seed. But maybe those teams are just kind of like, they come and play seriously and legitimately against the Cavs, and that kind of makes a difference here. But no, it's definitely something to keep your eye on, the fact that Cleveland has been playing really well lately, but these wins are starting to add up to the fact where there's a low chance that the pick could fall out of the top 10 for the Cavs, but there's still a chance, and I'd rather not have any of that probability happen to Cleveland, because it kind of always feels like the worst case scenario, and this is me being doom and gloom. But I don't know. I think I'd rather just watch them play, like, show positive signs of growth in these last 18 games, but this road trip will be a good test of that, and more so interested to see if this energy is able to travel with the team outside of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, which I almost called the Q. But
yeah, it's still Gund Arena to some. You know, it's like the Jake is still, it's Progressive is still the Jake or whatnot. So who's a player, Evan, that you are particularly interested in seeing on this trip? Is there someone you want to just see how they play that you're kind of most going to focus on?
I would like to see how Darius Garland plays. It's been a little bit. Colin Sexton has had a very, very good hot streak.
Mm-hmm.
It's been less than a week since he put up a career high 41 points, and then 2 days before that he put up a career high 32 points. So I'm interested to see what JB kind of does with that. Like you and I kind of touched on it last night, where how does the rotation shake out with Dellavedova also playing so well? Like, you can't bring Garland off the bench, because I think, one, that would kill his confidence with the little bit that he probably has at this point, just because he's had such an up-and-down rookie year. And I'm also interested to see how Jetty responds, and if we can keep Jetty at his peak, where he's been playing really well lately. And hopefully he doesn't dip back down at the worst possible moment. And I don't know, I'd just rather see Jetty kind of plateau at this point instead of just being all over the place, and we just kind of figure out what we're getting with him heading into next year. Because based on what Cleveland does in the draft and maybe what they do in free agency, there is a good chance that Jetty could become a bench player going forward. And I don't know, I kind of want to get him regular before you do that. What about you, bud?
I think it's actually Colin Sexton. Drummond's the kind of the obvious answer, because I still just like have no read on how he actually fits exactly, you know. But I think about Sexton, I think defensively, I'm going to spend a lot of time just like watching his defensive possessions, just because I think they're, you know, amongst our little circle, I think there's some divide on what he is. And then I think I'm actually like on the higher end of what he is as a defender. He's averaging like 4.5 assists over the last like 10 games or so. Like, I want to see if that holds up. It's been a lot of good reads to the corner. And again, he's just been like the best guy on the team the last couple weeks. So I want to see if that can kind of sustain and what that can kind of lead to. I do kind of hope that the Cavs, just selfishly, if you look at some of the guys that they're going to play in the next couple weeks, if you just look at the schedule, you know, I don't know, like, I don't think anyone in the Cavs has any hope of defending James Harden well. But if you look at, you know, I want to see him defend Trey a bunch on next Saturday, or on this coming up Saturday. I want to see him defend Zach LaVine on Tuesday. I want to see him defend Devontae Graham. I want to see him get the Oladipo assignment. Like, I want to see him having to defend guys one-on-one a little bit. Sometimes they don't do that, and sometimes it's because, like, it's a smaller guy that then Garland has to defend. But I just want to see how he's going to handle some of these guys, because I think that it'll at least give us a read on how, you know, he looks as kind of a lead defender in that way. And that to me is sort of like, let's see if he can sustain this, and then let's see what everything else kind of looks like around him.
Real quick before we wrap this up, do you think Drummond is going to be played off the floor against Houston, just because they don't play a traditional center? PJ Tucker is their starting center, who is 6'6" last time I checked.
Here's what I want. I really, really want JB Bickerstaff to just like say screw it and start Nance, Love, and Drummond against Houston.
Yeah, you might as well get a little weird.
I don't think that actually works. Like, I think they get shredded, but I really would quite like you to just see the I want to, if it doesn't start, I want to see how weird it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nance at the three in certain scenarios does work, and maybe against a team like Houston, who is starting, well, I guess you can consider James Harden a point shooting guard, but Russell Westbrook is a shooting point guard, and then you have three forwards alongside them. Like, I think there's a good chance to kind of see, is Nance at the three an actual thing that can work like long term instead of just this short burst scenario? So, yeah, no, I think that's something they definitely could explore.
Yeah, it's interesting too that when you think about how that sets up, Cleaning the Glass lists Kevin Love as the small forward on there, and I think that's about the offensive role, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's clearly like that the way, part of the reason it probably works, probably this works a little bit, is just that it's somewhat like interchangeable in terms of what it is, in terms of just their positioning and just Nance's kind of playing the inverse there. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk a little bit about a draft thing, kind of the start of the draft bit that's starting up on Locked On Cavs, Locked On Podcast Network as a whole. I'm on the way out here. You're going to hear Adam Stanko from the Rejecting the Screens podcast talking about Obi Toppin. He's one of our leading NBA draft experts across the network. So we're going to talk about the draft, talk about that draft board that we released. You can find it on Twitter. We'll make sure it's shared on our feeds as well. But here's Adam Stanko talking about Obi Toppin from Dayton. And we're going to be back to touch on this draft board, which we'll run through right after this.
There is a lot of talk about how Toppin is. You know, he plays in an offense, plays a lot of five out. Great, great movement without the ball. He catches everything, finishes everything, runs the floor extremely well, and can shoot from the outside. So there's a lot to love about Toppin. Obviously, his explosiveness, and people see the highlight plays.
And we're back here on Locked On Cavs. Okay, Evan, here is the top 14 prospects as voted on by Locked On NBA hosts. I will just say for the record, there's one guy in this list that is way, way higher than he was on mine. And I can't remember how I ranked everybody, but there's one guy in particular that is like way, way, way higher. Okay. Number one, Anthony Edwards. Two, James Wiseman. Three, LaMelo Ball. Four, our guy D.A. Denny. Five, Killian Hayes. Six, Obi Toppin, who you just heard about. Seven, Onyeka Okongwu. I'm totally mispronouncing that. I apologize. Cole Anthony, Tyrese Haliburton at nine. Eight, Isaac Okoro. 11, Nico Mannion. 12, Tyrese Maxey. 13, RJ Hampton. 14, Jaden McDaniels, with guys like Devin Vassell and Josh Green on the bubble. Evan, I'll just say this. My big divergence is that I have Wiseman way lower. Our guy, I'm going to call him 00. I'm going to call him 007, just a killer. Up much higher. And I think my top three was Edwards, 00, Denny. That was my top three. And the rest, it's sort of just like, I don't know. I can't say that I have like the best read on this stuff, but I try to think about what Trevor would do. And that's where I ended up. But I think Wiseman, particularly for the Cavs, is just like much higher than he actually would be in that kind of context.
Yeah, I think Trevor McNaughty's kind of tainted a lot of us in the Cavs Twitter sphere because he's so rock solid on his scouting when it comes to things. But speaking of Trevor, he did release his big board today. And yeah, he has James Wiseman 24th overall. And I think he would agree with your order, just maybe a little bit of a different order. He has Killian. He and Jackson Frank have Killian Hayes at number one, and after that is 007, then Anthony Edwards, then LaMelo Ball, Tyrese Maxey, and then our guy Denny. But overall, Wiseman is definitely a lot higher. Trevor soured me a lot on him to an extent, but he also has touched on the fact that guys who are maybe a little bit more plugged in on NBA coverage and stuff, who if they have James Wiseman higher on draft mock drafts going forward, there might be a reason behind that. And maybe teams are a lot higher on him than people who cover draft stuff more closely are to an extent. But, you know, I think I'd agree with your top three as well. Maybe you could make a case for Killian Hayes to maybe flirt with that as well. And then maybe LaMelo Ball, depending on who you're asking and what you're looking at. But I think overall, like, the draft board I think is pretty fair if you just moved Wiseman down a few pegs, but other than that, like, this is a pretty weird draft class overall, where I don't think you're really going to get a bona fide like all-star caliber player, maybe just a really good complimentary piece. And I think I've been saying this for a while, but just to make sure everyone remembers my stance on things.
Yes I'll just say again, I don't think either of us have like the acumen of someone like Trevor does. I'll link to Trevor and Jackson's big board below. They're both very, very good at this. Just spend way more time on this. I don't know how either of them have time for this. But Evan, when you look at the back end of this, let's say the Cavs like they don't get a top three pick. Let's say like Denny, they pick at like seven and our guy Denny is off the board. I'm saying this is like the timeline we don't want to live in. It's a kind of a thing you and I have not talked about. But with the odds the way they are, like, that could happen. The record stuff could get weird. Is there a name or two of the guys that are a little lower down that intrigue you for whatever reason? Are there guys down there that you're like, okay, like, I could live with the Cavs taking this guy if they're picking somewhere in that 7 to 8 range?
If I had to like give you three names, probably Obi Toppin, if it was like in that 7 to 10 range, if that's where Cleveland ended up landing in the draft, like, I think you can justify picking him there just because he's having such a good sophomore campaign for Dayton and is arguably the best team in the country. Like, you can make a case for him there, especially if Cleveland does move Kevin Love this summer. It also kind of fits a position I need because Toppin plays the power forward position. And
yeah, he's not anyone who describes him as a small forward is wrong. That much I understand. I haven't watched his tape, haven't understand his body type and all that stuff. He's not a three.
No, not at all. But a three that I would have in that range is Isaac Okoro from, I believe he plays at Auburn. Yes, he does. And he doesn't have a lot of offensive upside, but he's like the safest defensive prospect in this draft, at least according to Trevor. And actually, on Trevor's big board, I have it pulled up right now, that Okoro looks like a near sure bet to raise the floor of a team's defense, and this is me quoting him, and his finishing ability and decision-making may allow him to assume a Draymond Green-style role in a good team on offense. Okoro may not ever become a viable player on offense, but he's the best defensive prospect in the class, and that alone to me says a lot because Cleveland is such a piss-poor team defensively, that if you had a prospect like that, like, it's a good foundational piece to have. Like, Okoro's not going to be a heap massive killer when it comes to making a difference on the Cavs offensively going forward, but adding a smart defensive prospect to kind of counterbalance some of the offensive punch that Cleveland's been drafting lately might be a good thing. And then after that, it kind of feels like a bit of a crapshoot. You could, I don't know. I'm kind of looking at Tankathon's mock draft at the same time as this. And like after that, there's a lot of guards and maybe Tyrese Maxey, who's a defensive-minded two guard. And we kind of break up Sexland. And if you start Sexton or Garland next to him, depending on what you pick, you could kind of do that instead. But he is 6'3 and 198, so he's also undersized. But it sort of just starts to get a little murky, and then the draft definitely just takes a nosedive. It's a lot like last year's draft class, where once you kind of get outside maybe like the top five to top seven, it takes a bit of a nosedive in terms of talent. But when you get about the top maybe five or to seven in this draft class, it there's some prospects you really got to talk me off the ledge about, because it could go one of two ways. Either the Cavs get like a solid player, or they can get a real stinker if they were to happen to fall in that 7-10 range. And that's where it kind of get a little concerning, especially with how this year's gone.
Yeah, there's definitely some problematic guys there. I'd say the other guys on the list that are intriguing are Devin Vassell from Florida State is one, described by Jackson Frank in this as, quote, an elite team defender who debuted some of the off-the-dribble shot-making this year. He, quote, lacks the handle and strength to be much of an NBA on-ball creator, though. Nonetheless, the high release point gives him some added scoring versatility while the defense is legitimately special. That's also the kind of guy that I can, like, very much take the Cavs getting behind. I would rather them, if they fall to that range and, like, you know, they're picking between, like, swinging for the fences or that kind of stuff. I'm saying just a 10. If you can just get me a wing who can defend, and you could roll into next year with like a young guy who you think can kind of defend, maybe it's sort of like the Cam Reddish thing where like the guy just can defend right away and like the other parts of his game blossom. That's kind of what you're hoping for. And you roll into next year with like a really young wing rotation of like KPJ, who obviously we really like, Jetty, who obviously I think he's been pretty good this year for the most part, or at least solid and playable. And then you get Dylan Windler, who will be an older rookie, but still a rookie next year. Like, that feels pretty strong to me. And if you're looking at a thing where I think the Cavs, just if you're thinking about their roster construction right now, let's just assume that Drummond is on the team next year and Love is on the team next year, and you still have Sexton and Garland. You do not need another guy who needs to thrive off of shots. Like, you just, you need that, like I would need to, like, yeah, like, you need a utility guy. You need that, like, I need to, like, eat more junk food or something like that. Like, it is just wholly not necessary.
We need get that, the guy, like, that I need to stop plugging Bud Light Seltzer, which, Bud Light Seltzer, if you're listening, I will shill your product.
Or White Claw. I'm a White Claw man. I think of, like, the cigarette scene in, and do you ever watch Mad Men?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, where like he's talking to the guy at the black the guy at the restaurant, and the guy's like asking what kind of cigarettes he smokes.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I'm thinking about here. It's like I'm a White Claw man, which is like much less manly than like I'm a Lucky Strike man. Much less sexist, yeah, though, probably, and better for my lungs. Anyway, don't smoke or vape. I think if you could just get a guy like that, I would be very happy with that kind of draft. If you fall out of that range, I think there are certainly guys that have higher potential, maybe could be a star. But if you're looking at this like point guard kind of heavy draft, and you're not getting some of the guys that are a little higher that could be really impact makers, guys that you can at least just like bank on being good defenders is something I'm all in on that.
Yeah, I am too. And I actually have a question for you. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. Is there a player that, let's say, we assume we hope for the best, but expect the worst with the Cavs draft lottery odds, and they do land in like that 7-10-ish range. Is there a player that would raise a bunch of red flags for you, and you would not be happy with the Cavs picking? And you can give me like a blanket statement, like mine would be if they ended up picking another damn point guard at that range.
Like, yeah, if they just something. if they take like a Cole Anthony or Tyrese Haliburton, just another guard, and just like say like we'll figure it out, that's problematic to me. You know, the other one, I mean, I'm a little skeptical of Tobin. I get the allure, and I think there's definitely some skill there, and he's got some stuff that really is in his favor.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if the Cavs are the team that can bring that out of him. I just don't know that, and I've never been sure if the Cavs are an organization that can do that kind of stuff. And look, there's just a lot that could change the roster. I mean, the draft night is one of the nights where we're going to have a much clearer picture of sort of what things are going to look like. But if, let's say, like Kevin's gone and Drummond's gone and like just something, or one of those, at least one of those two guys is gone, and you just have minutes at the four spot, and for whatever reason, like you know, I like Dean Wade, but like Tobin is Toppin has like a much better kind of has a higher upside. Maybe that's the kind of situation where he makes some sense. But if it's just like, you know, this guy and we're going to have to throw him in where we have Kevin and Drummond and all these guards that need the ball, like that's where that pick would raise alarms for me.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. If it's another guard, I'll be a disappointed boy. Like, I talked myself into Darius Garland, but 3-point guards, and I know Colin Sexton's more of a scoring guard at this point in his career, at least in this juncture of his career. Yes, he has shown signs of playmaking, so I'll eat crow on that, but he is more of a scorer than anything. But if it's either they select another point guard or another guard that can is just an awkward, clunky fit with what they're trying to build, I would definitely be down on that. And I have noticed that people in the Cavs Twitter sphere are starting to talk themselves up a little bit about Jaden McDaniels. And so I asked Trevor today, I'm saying, like, why can you talk me down on Jaden McDaniels? And Trevor's like, he has a few things going for him. He has a handle and he has 2 to 3 bad habits. He shoots 34% from 3-point range. And then he said this to me, and again, I can't believe I have to repeat this. He's under 50% finishing at the rim as a driver. That's disqualified from any sort of creation load. And the only reason he's looked better lately in tournament play for the Pac-12 is the fact that they've taken the ball out of his hands, which is a pretty damning thing considering. And I think that he just wouldn't fit overall in what the Cavs are trying to do. And, like, I do have faith in their player development. Like, Colin Sexton's growth is definitely something you can give credit to Kent Leland's player development. Kevin Porter blossoming like he has is something you can give credit to as well. And also maybe the fact that a lot of teams missed on him, but you need, like I said, like I agree with you, if the Cavs can pull a bit of a utility guy who can kind of just clean up a little bit of the messes, like the rest of these offensive pieces that Cleveland has, and like there's always, you have so many mouths to feed that like maybe you need a guy who doesn't need the ball as much to operate and contribute meaningful minutes. Like, I think that's the right strategy going into this, but getting a ball dominant wing would be the antithesis, I think, of what Cleveland wants to do this summer, just based on no matter what happens with Kevin and Drummond, just what you're trying to do overall. And I think it would just definitely stunt this team's development going forward.
Yeah, I think that's all right. Evan, any final thoughts as we get out of here?
Wash your hands at least 30 seconds, guys. Don't touch your mouth. Don't touch your eyes. Don't touch your face in general. And just stay healthy, stay safe, and keep listening to Locked On Cavs because, you know, listening to the Chase Down podcast is as bad as having the coronavirus from what I've heard.
Well, I will not make those claims. Those are not FDA approved. But I will recommend using the meme generator for washing your hands. It's pretty great.
I saw what you tweeted and I got a good chuckle out of it.
I had a couple other ones that I didn't share because they took it a little too far. Like I did Suge by DaBaby and I was like, I can't do that. Not for me. Not for me. That's a very distinct peek into the music I listen to. But anyway, that's going to be it for this episode of Locked On Cavs. We'll be back tomorrow talking about Cavs Bulls, the first of that 6-game road trip. A whole bunch more, I'm sure, we'll learn about the NBA and the Cavs' response to the coronavirus outbreak between now and then. But for myself, for Evan, it's been Locked On Cavs. Again, check out Locked On Browns. Check out Rejecting the Screens and all of the great podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. Talk to you soon, guys.